Welcome to the Mandy Trapp Podcast. My name is, of course, Mandy Trapp, and I am a busy mom of three, a mindfulness coach, and the founder of Lifestyle Meditation. I believe that all of us, whether you know it or not, are on a journey to find out who we are, why we're here, and how to get what we really want. But to know all of this, I know that we must get quiet enough to hear the answers. Sometimes these answers come from somewhere deep within ourselves, and other times we find the answers in listening to the stories of others. This podcast is all about taking you beyond the idle and sometimes distracting chatter of the mind and introducing you to new and creative ways of seeing the world, yourself, and even the problems that you face. Thank you for spending time with me today. Now let the experience begin. Good morning, my friends. Happy Soulful Sunday. Come on in. I know that the beginning of these is always a little awkward if you're watching it as a recording, only because it's live and it takes a few minutes for everybody to hop in. So this is always a good opportunity for you to grab a coffee, a tea. We spend these Sunday mornings together, 45 minutes or so, talking about important topics, right? Sometimes these are things that we don't really have people in our lives or other people in our lives to talk to us about. So it's a great way of learning, seeing new perspectives. And then, of course, there's always self-reflection on these things as well. So I have something really, really important to share with all of you today as well. So thank you for coming in. Good morning, Debbie and Ned and Pam and Maria. Good morning, everybody. I have my Mount Shasta cup this morning. So I'm channeling some Mount Shasta energy. I'm sitting in my room in front of my altar because the fireplace I usually sit in is right underneath the TV, and the Formula One race is starting right now, so my husband is up early watching the car race right now. But it's so good to see all of you popping on here right now. Good morning. Good morning from the lake, Kara. Nice. Hi, Cheryl. Good morning, Edith. Jasmine, you found us today. All right, so as we are just about to get started, I'm hoping that a bunch of you that are coming in here right now were either part of the practice yesterday, or you've started to see through social media that we have a 21-day challenge coming up next Sunday. And it is also in conjunction with Mental Health Awareness Month. So it's Mental Health Awareness Month. And truthfully, I think that every single day, every single month should be mental health awareness, but there's going to be more that comes up. And awareness is one piece, but actually taking that awareness and doing something to integrate it, to put into action, is another. And the intention behind the challenge is that every single morning we slowly start to build little bits and pieces of, you know, physical health, of I will say psychological health, mental health, and spiritual health together, so that by the end of the 21 days is that you start to feel that you've created a new habit or a new behavior that you actually look forward to getting out of bed for in the morning. So you can always shoot me some private messages. You'll see way more coming out over the course of this next week about how you can sign up for this 21-day challenge as well. But a few of the messages that people have been asking me that I'm not entirely sure, unless you go into the actual calendar once you've signed up, that you can see all of the details on this. But a lot of people are saying, well, how long are these meditations in the morning? I have to get to work, or, you know, whatever those things are. And week one is only 5 to 7 minutes. Okay, it's 5 to 7 minutes, and it really is around the body. It's waking the body up, and it's getting that energy moving in through the body and starting to, I'll say, release any of the tension or the resistance that we've been holding on to. So week one is 5 to 7 minutes with more of a body based practice. And then week two, we build onto that with the breath. So there's three key pillars in any good practice, which is body, breath, and silence, okay, or stillness. So we bring the breath and some of that breath work in, and think about the breath almost like an irrigation system. we have to turn out all or turn up all of the stale, all of the stale breath, all of, there's a lot of different byproducts of stress and just even sitting around the carbon dioxide that we hold onto in the body that ultimately ends up accumulating in the muscles and in the tissues. And this is what creates a lot of stiffness, a lot of arthritis. It's also what creates wrinkles, everything that we have that we can see, but also everything we can feel. So breath work is one of the best ways for us to boost our physical health, but it also starts to focus the mind so that we can start to take control of our mental health. So think about the breath as that bridge. So week one, 5 to 7 minutes, and then we add the breath on. So now we're looking at a 10 to 12 minute practice. And then the last week we add on the deeper meditation piece, which I promise you, for a lot of you who say, you know, I try to meditate, but my mind is racing, or I get antsy in my body, or I can't sit still. It's likely because you are sitting down and you're closing your eyes and trying to clear your mind, and you haven't done any of the prep work to get there. This is why it builds. So we have to make sure that the body feels good and settled first. We get the breath clearing out anything else that we're holding on to, but it also helps to, you know, recharge everything and focus the mind. And then by that third week, which is going to be at that point a 15 to 20 minute practice, and no longer than 20, I promise you, is that it's so much easier to find stillness. But what do we find in the stillness? We find clarity and we find ourselves. We find our own voice. Now, if you're coming in here and you've read the title, oh, I don't even know how this shows up on Facebook Live, I should know this, but if you've read the title, is that really the topic that I wanted to talk to you about today is one that is really hard for me to, I'm gonna be really honest, it's really hard for me to share with all of you for many, many reasons. It's a very personal story to me, and it's something that not a lot of people know. But every day when I go into meditation, it's gotten louder and louder and louder that, Mandy, you need to share this. Mandy, you need to share this. And I'm even feeling like a little bit nervous. Like, full disclosure, I'm feeling a little bit nervous right now even saying that, because part of the fear that I have is that you won't agree, that you won't like me, that you'll judge me, and this is just a part of being human. But I have to share this piece with you because the topic of today is all about self-advocacy. And when we spend more time in meditation, we start to become extremely, extremely aware of all of those inner voices that we have. And when I say all, we have a lot of inner voices. We have the mother voice that's the protector and always trying to hold on. We have the child who just wants to run around and be creative and explore life. We have all of these voices, this inner family that kind of comprise our inner ego or that self, but then we also have the high self. We have the spiritual self. We have that wise old elder that's also in here as well. And so when we start to talk about self-advocacy, when we start to talk about, you know, making the best choices for ourselves and what's right for me, is that we have to sift through a lot of the external messaging. And there's a lot that's out there. And right now there is a lot that is out there that's telling us what to do and where to go and how we should do it. And it gets so confusing and overwhelming to the point where we're like, okay, I'll do this or I won't do this. But it feels out of alignment for us. And so we have, and if you guys have been coming to these Soulful Sundays, if you've been in the practice, if you've learned or listened to me, or even if it has nothing to do with me and you have been on this path exploring for yourself, what you know is that we have an internal compass. We have a gut instinct. Okay, you don't have to be deeply spiritual to know what a gut instinct feels like. But we also have an intuitive compass. And some of us feel that in the heart. Some of us feel it in the head. It's almost like, I don't know why I have to do this, but I have to do this. We all have these compasses that are asking us to be guided from within internally, whether or not you actually take the guidance from self or not. And this is a moment by moment basis, a choice by choice basis. But what I can tell you with 100% certainty is the times that I have had a strong gut instinct and I haven't listened to it, is that I've almost always regretted it, because something played out that I was like, ugh, no, that didn't feel true for me, right? Even if something panned out and people are like, wow, look what you did, this is so successful, or you made this money, but inside it's like, ugh, I still don't feel good about that. Right? So there's other times where I do trust it and I do listen to it. And whether I've been patted on the back for it or I've been condemned or rejected because of it too, really at the end of the day, it's like say what you will, even to my family or people that I love, but I knew that I needed to do this for me. So here's a story that I'm going to share with you right now. Okay? And the precursor to this story is kind of what I was starting to share, is that the more time that we spend in meditation and the more time that we get to know ourselves, the louder these voices get, the louder the instinct, the louder the intuition. And it gets to the point where it becomes so difficult to not listen to it, because even as I'm speaking to you right now, there's a part of me that's like, well, you know, maybe don't tell the story. And then there's that high self that's like, it's now. This is why I feel a little bit nervous about sharing it. So I can't not listen, and I can't not share this anymore. But I'm going to tell you this story because I trust that it's coming, you know, at a right and proper time. And please receive this into your heart with love and without shame or without anything. This is an opportunity for all of us for self-advocacy. Just 6 years ago, some of you know this, that we had moved our family to Bali for a year to have a bit of a different experience. My husband had just sold his business. I could run lifestyle meditation remotely, and we decided to take our kids for a year just to hit pause and to really come together as a family unit. And part of that was all of the preparations that go into going. This is funny. We decided to go somewhere for a year that we'd never been before. We'd never been there. We didn't fall in love with it. We didn't say this would be a great spot, but we had a list of the different experiences that we wanted to have and the values that we held as a family. And we knew a lot of people who had been there, so we made this choice. And so I researched, you know, where to live. I researched where the kids should go to school. We researched a lot of things. The one thing that I didn't really do any research on, except I was feeling a lot of pressure, was around getting vaccinations to go. And I have to say that, and I'll say it like point blank, I'm not anti-vax. I do all of my research on all of these types of things. And I've been to India many, many times before that and did not take any vaccinations. Why? Because I work with doctors day in and day out, and I always go into them saying, okay, it's like going to the casino, like, give me my odds. Like, what is it that I could potentially get right now? Like, let's look at my current state of health. What are some of the implications of the vaccine? And I did a lot of research, and I said, I do work with a lot of doctors all of the time, so I ask these questions 1,000 times. There was something that felt different about going to Bali, and part of that was, well, I'm going to be there for a year. I wouldn't want to put myself in harm's way. I wouldn't want to put my children in harm's way. And so we went in to the travel clinic, and I thought, okay, the one thing that I think that we all need to go in and get right now is hepatitis, the hepatitis shots. So I don't need to get hepatitis. We need to go get the hepatitis shots, because we're living in a tiny little village. I didn't know about the water sources. I didn't know anything. We were not in a resort. And so I was making what I felt to be the most informed decision. And so we all went in to get our shots. And while we were there, the person who was administering the shots had opened up a menu. And she said, okay, so you're traveling where? And I said, okay, we're going here. You need to get this, this, and this as well. And I said, well, you know, I've done a little bit of research on those ones, and it's not really prevalent in that area, I don't necessarily think. And she said, no, I really strongly recommend this. And I could feel everything in my gut just saying, no, you're good. You know, you have your hep A and your hep B, like everything is good. And she kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and to the point where she said, you know, how are you going to feel if something happens to your kids? And everything inside of me in that moment was like, don't play that card on me. I haven't had the time to go in and look at this. I haven't had the time to research. I haven't had the time to go back to and talk to, you know, my team of doctors who I trust. And she said, well, in the least, then I really need you to strongly think about getting this other shot. And I said, okay. And so we got the other shot. And I could just feel everything in me in that moment. And I was like, okay, Mandy, like, let it go. Maybe you're just feeling like forced or coerced into something. And so a week later, we left for Bali. And a week after that, my feet started to fall asleep, my hands started to fall asleep, and I was in bed reading one night and I felt like somebody poured cold water onto my head, and it felt so shocking that I actually jumped over to the side because I thought that, John was laying right next to me in bed. I thought that he had done something. And I see that, okay, well, no, nothing had happened, but everything in the top of my head went tingly, and I knew that something wasn't right. And so I immediately emailed my doctor back here in Canada, and I said, I don't know what's going on right now. I don't really have a lot of feeling in my hands. I don't have a lot of feeling in my feet. It feels like when everything goes to sleep, it had been like that for a week, and it wasn't going away. And I said, now in my head, and I'm Googling and I'm self-diagnosing myself with all sorts of autoimmune diseases and everything. And her response to me was, I think you're under a lot of stress. There's a big transition. I said, I agree. She said, I think that what is happening with you is it's a vitamin B deficiency. Can you go to a doctor? And so I went to a doctor who was there, who was an expat living there, who was from Germany. He was a Western, an allopathic doctor, but he was also a naturopathic doctor. And he said, yeah, just kind of looking at you, I think probably, you can start doing vitamin B injections and things might turn around for you. And so I went every single week for the next 12 weeks for these vitamin B injections. And was it helping? I don't know. Like maybe a little bit, maybe part of it was kind of in my head and I wanted it to help. I wanted it to work. And I know in a lot of different ways that placebo effect is important. And I was doing some of my own healing work and trying to reduce any of my stress of the transition as much as possible. And did that for a few months. And then one night when my mother-in-law was visiting us, we were out at a restaurant and I started to get a very severe attack right in the center of my kind of small intestine and stomach. And it was all I could do to make it home in time, and I spent the entire evening on the bathroom floor vomiting and shaking and sweating. And that started what would be 3 more months of this every single day, and I lost 20 pounds. And that all of the doctors there thought that I had a heart condition, there was something wrong at one point in time. They actually thought I was having a heart attack. I got carried on a stretcher to a hospital, and they put a huge scope down to see that everything was eroded away through my esophagus down into my stomach, but they didn't know why. They didn't know what was happening. And as soon as I came home from the hospital, I started to get the most severe back pain. Now, keep in mind, this has been going on now for 9 months. And this back pain was so much that if I would lay down and sleep, even for half an hour in that position, I would get up and I couldn't catch my breath. It would take me a solid half an hour to an hour to be able to fully be able to breathe and to move my body around. And I also started to create stories for this. I thought, okay, well, it's because I'm sleeping on a different bed, or it's because, I have a lot of tension and I'm so sick every single day that there's something happening here. This goes on for a couple of more months. We move home to Canada, and at that point, I go straight to my doctor the next day, and I said, I need you to send me for bone scans. I need to do something right now because there's something not right in my spine. And I go through all this whole rigmarole of tests looking structurally at my body, and they're saying, no, everything is fine. I think your muscles are just really tight. And one of the other indicators to the muscles being tight is that I was starting to lose sensation in my lower body. This is embarrassing, but I'll share. It wasn't normal incontinence, like as I have from having 3 children, but I wouldn't even get a signal that I had to pee. So I would just start to feel, oh, what's going on here? A couple months after that, my bowels started to prolapse. And so also I was having a hard time with bowel movements. Couldn't be sexually active. Even if I was, just walking, not paying attention, having to wear pads all the time because urine would just start to fall out. I know, beautiful and super attractive for a 40-year-old woman. And in severe pain, and in severe pain every single day for the next 3 years. And I kept going back to doctors here and I said, there's something that's not right. And they're like, you're fine, your muscles are tight, you're very active. And the truth is that I was getting less and less active because I couldn't exercise anymore. I felt like the bottom was falling out. I was clumsy. I was tripping over things. My feet and my legs were always falling asleep. And I was in pain more and more and more often, not just when I would wake up in the morning. And so for almost a solid year, like 9 months or so, I was going to physio probably 2 times a week, 3 times a week, and it got to the point where he finally said to me, he said, "Mandy, there's something really wrong with you. And I don't know what it is, but I love you and I don't want to touch you, but there's something really wrong with you, and I really think that you need to go to a doctor and you need to demand that they do more tests with you." And over a 2 week period of time, I went from probably feeling numb, 30% numbing in my body, almost to a 90% numbing. The day before I found out what was wrong, I rear-ended somebody very slow in a traffic circle because I could not feel my foot to go onto the brake of my car. And I couldn't admit what was happening. Everything was falling apart. But a week before that, I shared in tears with my husband where I was at, and he saw me. He knew I was like urinating all the way down. I couldn't feel anything down my pants. And he phoned my neighbor, and my neighbor is a neurologist. And he said, "You know, there's something really wrong with my wife, and nobody seems to know what's happening right now. Can you help?" And she said, "Listen, tell her to go into the emergency room right now. Don't tell her not to talk about the back pain, but just talk about that she has no feeling, that she's numb, that just it needs to she needs to come in. If they're really going to do the right scans, this can't be a back pain thing. This has to be a neurological thing." And I went in and they did a CAT scan on my brain. As we talked to the doctors, they were expecting maybe something like MS, maybe something even more severe, autoimmune, neurological. They said, "Your CAT scans are normal. We have no idea what's going on with you right now. We can get you in for an MRI, but the way that the MRI wait times are right now is we can't get you in for 6 months." In the meantime, we go home. We are so grateful that we have so many friends. We know five other neurologists. And one of the neurologists that we have connections, I should say, to five other neurologists, one of the other neurologists who I didn't see called me. And he's a top neurologist Mayo Clinic in the US. And he said, "Mandy, I'm just going to ask you a few questions right now." He said, "I've seen your scans. I've read your charts, your papers. Can I ask you know, this, this, and this?" And I said, "Yeah, go for it." And he asked me all of these questions. And he just said, "I know what you have, but I don't know why you have it." He said, You have a neurological disorder known as transverse myelitis. And it's not common. There's a lot of reasons why sometimes this shows up in people. It tends to be quite sudden. Yours is very slow growing, but he said, "I'm going to ask you one question that guaranteed nobody has ever asked you before, and there won't likely be any other doctors that ask you this, but I'm going to ask you." He said, "From the onset of your symptoms, did you have any vaccinations?" And I said, "I did. I did." And he said, "Okay, there's a chance that you had an adverse reaction. Did they explain to you that this is one of the side effects of some of these vaccines?" And I said, "No, nobody explained any of that to me. I said, but I felt it. And now this has been happening for 3 years, and I could feel everything inside of me just going, I had an adverse reaction." And he said, "Here's the deal." He said, "It shows here that you can't get in for an MRI for 6 months. You don't have 5 days. So I don't know what you need to do, but you need to figure out how." And I said, "Well, I can pay for an MRI. Like, that's not a big deal. Like, they're trying to push me through the public healthcare system. I will pay." And he said, "Then I strongly suggest that you go tomorrow, because what's happening for you, you could be paralyzed by the end of the week." And so I went in the next morning and I paid for an MRI. And my mom came because we're going to go for lunch after. And at the end of the MRI, while I was getting my clothes back on, the sorry, like I can't even speak right now, the tech, and it was actually her first day, so bless her heart. She comes in and she's white as a ghost, and this is a clinic that's not attached to a hospital or anything. And she said, so the radiologist has just looked over your things and he's called ahead to the university hospital for you right now. They're expecting you and you need to go. And I said, okay, is there a reason for that? And I didn't know what the reason was, aside from the fact that when they actually injected the dye into me to get a closer look and to send me back into the machine, I passed out and I vomited everywhere. And I thought, okay, maybe there was something about that. Maybe I had an infection. And I went out there and I said to my mom, I have to go to the hospital. She's like, well, did they tell you why? And I said, no, they didn't tell me why. I just have to go to the hospital. And so we get to the hospital and my mom had called my husband and he came and rushed into the hospital. And after sitting in the waiting room for a couple of hours, they pulled me into this little side room in triage because the ER was bumping. It was standing room only. And there was a team of probably six or seven doctors that pulled me in and said, you know why you're here, right? And I said, no. And I hadn't even seen my MRIs or anything at that point. And they said, you're here because you have a tumor in your spine. And I said, okay. And they said, well, looking at your MRI right now, and I'm seeing you, the woman that's walking across this floor. There's no way. I expect this person to be in a wheelchair. I expect this person to be paralyzed. The tumor had grown and was compressing my spinal cord so badly that you couldn't even see that I had a spinal cord anymore. And they said, you know, if you'd waited another day or two, you wouldn't be walking out, you'd be wheeling out of here. And so I was immediately rushed in. I was put on steroids for the next 2 days to shrink it as much as possible. There was no movement. I couldn't really feel. They were pinpricking my feet and I could feel nothing that was happening. I was basically in diapers. I mean, it was awful. And in my heart and in my gut, all that I heard was the voice of this other neurologist saying to me, you know, this, I'm almost positive, is what's happening with you right now. And I knew that this was a reaction, and I had said something to my surgeon. Could this be because of this? And he said, no, that doesn't happen. Okay. So my story that I've always shared with people is that it was random, and I don't know why or I don't know how. But a few months ago, there's this beautiful woman who we connected through Facebook here in the city named Bean Gill, and Bean is in a wheelchair. She was paralyzed literally overnight on a trip in Vegas with a bunch of her friends a few years back. And she had posted an article a few months ago of one of the COVID vaccines being pulled from trials in Europe because people were coming down with this rare neurological disorder known as transverse myelitis. And I commented on her thing and I said, oh my gosh, and this is what I have. And her response to me was, I know, I followed your story. This was me too. And I sat there and I sobbed because I saw her. And all that kept flashing through my head was when I was in the hospital, was being in that wheelchair and wheeling my kids down the aisle to their graduations, to their weddings, like all of these pieces. And this isn't a poor me, and this isn't a poor anything that's happening. And this isn't, I don't share any of this with any of you who've made the choice. Like, just so you know, I'm not coming on here to say, don't get vaccines, don't get shots. The point of why I needed to share this so loudly is to share with all of us that we need to listen to ourselves. We need to listen to our bodies. My body did not do well with that. My body does not do well with that. And if I don't listen to and speak up, the risk that I ran, the bullet that I very nearly dodged right there because I wasn't listening to what I knew to be true for me, is that my husband would have spent the rest of our life together carrying me up and down the stairs to bed. And it's not something that I really want to think about, but I think about this every single day, and I wake up every morning and I rub my legs and I say thank you. I thank the doctors who helped me in the nick of time. I thank my physiotherapist who said, Mandy, there's something really wrong with you. I need you to go in. I thank that neurologist that planted the seed and then who also continued to go in to the Alberta government to really lobby against all of their restrictions on MRIs and why it's taking so long and how, you know, he's losing patients to brain cancer and to other things like that because they can't get in time. There is such a huge need for advocacy right now, and I, for 3 years, like literally almost bit my tongue off because I thought I'm too strong. I don't want to bother anybody. I don't want to be a heretic who constantly says, oh my gosh, like, you know, listen to me. You know, this crazy lady is that I know my body better than anybody else knows my body. And this is something because of this that I've shared with my children. And here's the deal, you guys, is I share with my children what I know, what I've researched, what I know to be true about Western medicine, about Eastern medicine, about energetic medicine. I share with my children what I know to be true. But embedded within all of that, I share with them an even more powerful message to take all of this information and this knowledge and to feel it into their body so that they can make that choice. I think as their parent that I know what's best for them, but I actually don't, right? In the same way that I am not judging or criticizing. I mean, I can get caught up in the, you know, big pharma just wants to make money, and that could be a part of it as well. Don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, there are humans behind everything. There are humans in government. There's humans in pharma. There are humans who are also protesting everything. And I genuinely believe that people want what's best. We are not seeing the situation as it is. We are seeing it as we are and what we want it to be. And we want people, generally, we want people to be well. We think that we know what's best. Pharma thinks that they know what's best. Government thinks that they know what's best, right? I think that I know what's best for you. So I'm always trying to push my messaging on you. All that I can do is share my story in a way for us to take the blinders off and to see, like, wait a second here. When I'm listening to somebody telling me that you need to do this, I need to feel it through the fabric of my being to go, I hear what you're saying. I need to feel if that feels true for me. Right? I need to feel if that feels true for me. Because if that feels true for me, then I can walk very confidently into this knowing that taking the shot, not taking the shot, you know, drinking the juice, not drinking the juice, doing that form of exercise, not doing that, this diet, not that diet, but I can make these choices for what feels best for me. Right? So educate, 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 which helps us to be able to evaluate, I would say intellectually, what a lot of the potential risks are. The thing that really bothers me right now in this moment is that we are not being shared all of the data. And heartbreaking, I have a connection to a physician who's on a Métis settlement in Northern Canada. And out of 900 of the first round of these doses, 10 people have now become paralyzed and are experiencing severe neurological complications. And I can't help but to think that, holy cow, like, is this what it is, right? Is this transverse myelitis? This is a part of all of this, neurological conditions. Did they share that? Did they let people know that when they're making that choice, that I'm still going to make this choice, even if it means that I'm paralyzed, even if it means that I get blood clots, even if it means, right, I get these tumors in my brain or in my spine. But at least we can weigh the risks and we can take that chance for ourselves. And this is something that is not being shared publicly right now, because I feel like there's so much coming from both sides that we feel that we're being pulled into other people's perspectives. My invitation to you is to do your own research, and we do the research outside of ourselves and we do the research inside of ourselves. And honestly, you guys, it's why meditation is such an important practice to me, because it's so easy for me to lose my own voice in the voice of others. And the last thing that I would want to see would be anybody, you know, having any of these lasting effects or lying on their deathbed because they took somebody else's word for it. We need to be these advocates and champions for ourselves because we know. And so the mantra that just plays through my head again and again and again and again and again right now is that we are not seeing this situation as it is, we're seeing it as we are, right? And if you are in a place of fear and scarcity, looking for certainty outside of yourself, you're going to find that anywhere, and you're going to take that as your own, right? But if you feel confident, if you feel connected to your instinct, to your intuition, to your spirit guide, then whatever choice you make, you are making it from deep certainty within yourself, so that regardless of the outcome, you feel confident in the choice that you have made. And I feel that that is something that is being taken from us. Thank you, Cindy, for listening to that story. And I think one of the primary things that's held me back from sharing that story is that I really don't want, the last thing is that I don't want people to feel ashamed for the choices that they make. I don't want people to feel ashamed. I have worked really hard to pull back on my shame that I have held around forcing my kids to do things, right? Because as parents, I'm pretty crafty sometimes. I can be highly manipulative as a mother. When I want my kids to do certain things, I can make them do that. I know how to play that game all day long. But it doesn't feel good because I know that I'm manipulating them, right? And I get it. My kids are teens too, and that they can be so in tune with that. But now the way that I'm seeing all three of them conducting their lives and making those choices. And the other thing that I want to say about all of that too right now is, you know, unrelated but totally related. And I'll only say it here because I know that he won't listen. But my baby, who's 13 years old, who still is and will always be my baby, is that about a month ago he started sleeping with us. It's not like this ongoing, like, oh, can I just sleep with you and move my room in? It's an every single night, hey, can I sleep with you guys tonight? Right? It's a renegotiation. And we don't say anything. I don't say, no, this isn't right for your dad and I. This isn't right because you're 13. You need to be in your own bed. What he needs right now, and this is me really bolstering and boosting up him listening to his intuition and his instinct, but this is Mental Health Awareness Month. What are we going to do? What does that actually mean? We can talk about it. We can post the quotes and the statistics, but what does that mean? It means taking off the blinders and also seeing and supporting the choices of others. And what I'm seeing in my son at 13 years old is that he's struggling. He's struggling. He's anxious and he's depressed. And I'm not seeing that, you know, I'm not watching him have panic attacks. I'm not seeing him hiding out in his room in a deep depression. But the way that I'm seeing this for him is that he needs to be with his parents right now, right? So I would not be able to see that if I had a fixed idea about where he should be at this point in time in his life, or what feels appropriate, or what feels right based on, you know, this is what my husband and I need right now. No, this is what he needs, and this is me supporting that choice. So he has been sleeping in our bed. Trust me, I'm like hanging off the side of the bed every single night because him and my husband have no problem stretching out. And I had even, you know, shared this with like another friend recently, and she's like, well, why don't you just get up and go into his bed, or why don't you go into the spare bed? And that's not the point. The point as to why he's sleeping in my bed is because he needs me, right? It's not because he wants to be up here in this bed and out of his room is in the basement now. It's because he needs me. And truthfully, I need a little bit of that right now too. And we're all like, we really are all moving through life together. We are all just trying to figure all of this out. But as we are figuring all of this out, we need to make the best choices for ourselves on a moment by moment basis. Everybody, thank you for sharing that, Cheryl, and yeah, you're all sharing these stories right now. Ashley, everybody's gonna have a judgment about whether you're doing it right or whether you're doing it wrong, right? They could be saying to you at 2 years old, you should not be breastfeeding your children anymore. You know what? You do you, right? They're going to tell you, oh, well, you shouldn't be giving this to your kid, or you shouldn't be doing this as a parent. You do you. Self-advocacy means knowing what it is instinctively and intuitively, what feels right for you in that moment. And I cannot stress that enough, in that moment, not forever. Because the moment that we say, this is what's best for me and my family, period, you know, forever and ever, is that we actually stop ourselves from growing and evolving. things are always changing, but it's like this right now, this week, right? Tonight, this day, this is what's best for me. This is what's best for my child. This is what's best for my husband. This is what's best for my family right now. Tomorrow when we wake up, we ask again. We reevaluate what feels best for me right now. And so even with that, you guys, going back to this idea of a job or a nutrition plan or anything like that, is allow yourself to be fluid and to listen on a moment by moment basis about what feels best for me right now, right? I promise you, as you start to do that, is that you give others permission to do the same. And when you do that, as I'm sharing that with you, is that I know what's best for me. When people ask me, you know, are you gonna get it? Are you gonna get it? My truth that I have been afraid to speak out loud is that, you know what? It doesn't feel right for me right now because my body, so I don't have a tumor anymore, which is incredible. But what I would share very openly with you is that I have massive incontinence problem. I wear like a diaper pad every single day. Being a 42-year-old woman, this doesn't feel sexy. For me, I'm working through my own femininity issues, my sexuality issues. You know, John and I have had to really, you know, reevaluate like our intimate life. And this is a forever and ever and ever for me, because it's not a matter of going to pelvic floor physio. I've done that, and I've also gone for, you know, what do you call it? Consultations with doctors about getting things in to lift all of my internal organs. It's not about that. It's about the fact that the neurons, that the myelin, so what this is the myelin, which is, if you think almost like the old school phone cords, or even I look at the power lines outside, is that it's that protective sheet, that coating on it, that allows the message to go from your brain all the way down in, is that mine is demyelinated a lot, and it's damaged, and it's not going to come back all the way. So this is something for me for the rest of my life that I have to handle and deal with. And I got back into running, so I literally wear like the world's biggest pad, and I feel gross and awful, but I'm trying to embrace all of that as well too. So there are lasting impacts and effects to all of this. And so I know for me, for my body, I'm going to make my own choices. Now, self-advocacy does not mean that I am advocating for you. I can't do that. You can do that. I can share my story with you, but by no means am I telling you what to do and the choices that you need to make. I'm telling you why I'm making the choices that I'm making. That's it, right? This is what we need to do for ourselves. This is what we need to give each other permission to do. We need to give each other permission to do this, and on all levels. And it starts with ourselves, and then we slowly start to build those rings out. So the way that I look at it is I look at, you know, what is my little ring system here? Is that I have me in the middle, and then I have my husband and I. So what is it that the two of us are constantly evaluating and reevaluating in our relationship? And then there's our children, right? Okay, so what does that look like within our family? What are the choices that we are constantly making within our family? And then I look at my extended family, my parents, my mothers-in-law, my father-in-law, my sisters, my brothers. What is it that we are deciding as a family? And then my community, right? My friends, my community, all of you, my friends and my community. Because even as I go farther out, there's a string of advocacy that moves through all of you. And I have promised since day one, I have been teaching mindfulness and meditation now for 22 years. I have promised through all of those rings to always be an advocate for mental health, for emotional health, and for spiritual health, right? I have promised to always stand at the top of the mountain and to share a voice and a message that often gets muffled, right? And it often gets pushed down, and it's often hidden. And I've promised that. And yes, it is something that I reevaluate how I do this on a day-by-day basis, but I will always stand beside that. And I will never falter, and I'll never waver from that. That I can promise you. And there's a strength that we all have in ourselves when we tune into what feels right. And that's where it always starts. So coming all the way back to the beginning, what is the practice that I can share with all of you? Is it is getting in tune with your gut instinct and with your intuition in your heart. And something that I will that I will stress to all of you is one of the reasons why this becomes so muddy and sometimes so hard to follow is because the gut and the heart don't use words. They don't speak English. It doesn't speak French. It doesn't speak Spanish. It does not use language in the way that we're using language because it's feeling. And so oftentimes when we can't put it to words, we confuse that with untruth or not real. I shouldn't be guided by this because I can't actually rationalize it. And so then we try on other people's words for that. What I'm telling you is that you don't owe anybody any explanation. You don't know words. We need to get back into just trusting and saying, I feel this, so I do this, right? I know this, so I act in this way. This is what needs to guide us, not this, right? This is always changing. This, when you tune into it, will never change. So thank you, everybody, for listening and receiving my truth and my story with so much love. I'm probably going to have a really good cry after all of this. And I'm going into my own journey today. I'm going into ceremony all afternoon today. And for me, it feels like a release. It feels like, oh, okay, I said it, I did it. And I shared the essence of what this experience has been for me. And would I go through this again to be here? Yeah, I would. You know, a few people in my life who are really close to me who know this have asked me, you know, knowing what you know now, would you have taken that shot? Would you have done it any different? And you know what? I don't know it any differently. And because I've had the lesson, because I have had the experience that I've had, and also because I have the outcome and I'm still walking around, and maybe that would be different if I wasn't walking. I don't know. All that I know is what I know now. I'm deeply grateful for the experience that I've had. I still have to go for scans every single year. There's a 45% recurrence rate in these types of tumors, and not just in the spine, but in the brain. So there's a lot that I still hold on to. And one of the reasons why I share this with you is because I don't want to do it alone. I don't want to struggle. I'm sure in a lot of your ways too, that a lot of you that I know going through your own health challenges where you feel ashamed or you feel that you can't share it out loud or publicly. People with cancer, you know, as soon as you're clear, the rest of your family exhales and moves on with their life, but it's kind of always this thing that sits on your shoulder, as it is for me as well. Right? That's just full truth and full honesty. And so because of that, I'm listening. The biggest lesson that I've had for myself is to be that advocate, is to listen to those little nudges before they become these brick houses that are crashing down on top of us, and to speak up for what feels right for me. And that's exactly what I'm doing here and what I want to share with all of you. So that being said, my invitation to all of you is to start your morning by tuning into your gut, tuning into your heart, and letting that guide you in any way that you wish to do that. Okay, anyway, if you do it by sitting on the corner of your bed, if you do it by going for a walk outside in nature and listening, but listen. If you do that by joining, starting next Monday, is a 21-day challenge. So for people that are members of the practice, it's totally free. You can join. It's $27 a month or not. I think it's $47 for the whole challenge. And I'll just say this right now, you're doing it online too. So if you have more than one person in your house, is that you don't have to pay twice. You can invite everybody that's in your house for that rate as well too. But just so you know, my intention in a portion of these proceeds that we do raise through this is going to be in supporting voices around sharing neurological disorders, bringing positive messages in. I've been talking a little bit with my friend Bean, who I had shared with you. We had a conversation about a month ago, and we're going to come back in. And behind the scenes, behind everything, is that I'm putting together, I don't know, what would you call it, a movement, a nonprofit, a movement called I've Got Your Back. Because so many people have had my back through all of this. And sometimes what we need is we need a little bit of encouragement to really listen to ourselves and to dig in and to work through the things that we need to work through. So that starts next Monday. So you can go onto mandytrapp.com and you can learn way more about that. But usually we end these practices with like this big, beautiful practice. But really what I'm feeling called to end this with today is for all of you to come back into yourself now and to ask yourself if something that you listened to, something that you didn't listen to, some sort of gut instinct nudge where you're like, thank God, I'm so grateful I listened, or a gut instinct nudge that you didn't listen to, like me, you got the message and we can be grateful for. Can we just all in this second tune into the energy of gratitude? So what is it that is moving and operating inside of yourself? What is this inner voice? What is this wisdom? What is this warrior that is calling to you, yelling to you, listen, listen to me? As you listen even more intently, feeling a sense of familiarity, taking a moment to be in gratitude and in deep appreciation. All of the times and all of the ways that you have listened, and it has carried you through, it has allowed you to rise up and to move on. And for all of those times where you didn't listen, and even that was perfect, what came out of that denial of that voice was something that has brought you into this moment, your strength, your courage, your conviction. And then making a silent commitment to yourself from this place of gratitude, from listening to that quiet whisper or that giant roar, making that silent commitment to yourself, to tuning in and to listening every day, every morning, so that we may be guided by our own truth, that we may rise up to be the advocates for ourselves, knowing that as we do that, we set that example for our children, for our families, for our friends, and for our communities. And may we lovingly, so lovingly, please hold space for others to make those choices and those decisions for themselves. And as we do this, we stay anchored in the heart and we all rise as one. And in honoring that one divine voice, that light and that love that permeates all of us and all living things on this planet, we close today by saying namaste. 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 Namaste, my friends. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Please go in, join us, join this community for the practice at mandytrapp.com, and please share this message. I'm not entirely sure because of a lot of the things that I spoke about, if it will stay up for long. A lot of these things tend to be taken down. So please, and thank you, Susan. Check out Lisa Kay on YouTube, an intuition teacher. Okay, I'm going to do it. So this is another reason why these Soulful Sundays are so important. We all get to share with each other that we all have these different resources. Sending all of you so much love on this day and always as you go out into the world and really listen to the guidance. Let's really show each other what strength is about, what courage is about, what health and well-being and what self-advocacy is about. I love you all. Happy Soulful Sunday. Namaste.